Following podcast contains profanity and is unsuitable for a child-friendly or work environment.
Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to Almost a Podcast, episode 159 with Paul and Chris and Barry.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
What are we doing today?
So today is War Master Revolution updates for 2021. So the committee has chatted about these things, voted on these things, and these are now in, these are all in the developmental stage. So that means that they are essentially tournament legal, they're to be used. And then in a year's time, the committee would vote on them again. And if they, and those will go from developmental to approved, hopefully. And there'll be more ones as well, because then there'll be other people's other ideas come up and they will be put into developmental, and that is from the experimental and conceptual stages. Is that right?
Yeah. Reason? Yeah. I mean, we mainly have stuck to armies and army lists. We haven't messed around with the main rule book too much. We did do a little bit around basing, but that was kind of fringe. We haven't we haven't messed with the main rules.
Yeah, and so that's it. We've got quite a lot. Some are essentially superficial, but there are some. I would have said, like, there's nothing game breaking in it, or like, you know, but
you don't want
is
anything to be game breaking. That's the very definition of what you don't want.
Yeah, I get it, but like, there's not like some huge change. But
we're not GW trying to sell models. That's the whole point.
It's interesting because it's this is now a robust method that the punter can influence, as in, like, I've got a great idea. You put it on the experimental forum, one of us might pick it up, try it, run with it, and you might eventually, in a few years' time, see it actually as a rule in the game.
Or within a few months in the in this update document for 2022.
So,
So Chris is going to be doing the sharing because I'm on a bit of a minimal setup today, and here we go. Well, that's excellent. We got about an hour because I'm going to the beach today. Because it's lovely and the kids are all off. Joe's taking a day off.
Fantastic. Right, let's do it then.
Right. So if you're listening or watching at home and you want a copy of this document for yourself, you can go to the War Master Revolution site, and it's in, Alice just put up a little tab saying developmental, and you can download this from here. I think it's probably worth just for the people who are not familiar with the process that Paul was very nicely described. We took quite a few leaves out of the book of the Epic guys. And there's basically sort of four statuses of rules and lists and things like that. It starts off with conceptual. Conceptual is an idea that you're a nice idea that you've had. You know, just your random thoughts, wherever you get them. And when you work on that, sometimes when you have an idea yourself, it seems great. And then you describe it to other people come along and go, ah, no, wait a minute, there's a big problem with that. So after a little bit of discussion, it's called an experimental rule. We're gradually collating up some of the ideas that have been on the conceptual ideas that have been mooted on the experimental forum. That's probably my next big task, actually, to try and make a list of all the things that we're trying out. So the idea is that when it's worked on by a few people, then it becomes experimental, and it needs further play testing. Some things will end there. There'll be some things that are never really intended for anything other than just a fun, friendly game. I've certainly got quite a few ideas that fit into that category, but some things actually may be worth further work and putting into the tournament packs, and that's when something gets worked on by the committee and put into developmental. Developmental stuff should be well balanced, but because we can't exhaustively play test every single thing, there might be a few things that aren't. So therefore, there may need to be a little bit further work on it. So to get to approved status, then things will be at developmental for a period of time. For most things, probably about a year. For other bigger things, like perhaps army lists, that might be a little bit longer, depending on play testing. And then it gets to be approved and official. I think it's probably worth also saying that all the lists that we currently have that are at approved status, which is basically all the lists except the Cathay and Nippon lists, they're all approved, but being approved does not necessarily mean they're set in stone, and small changes, as you'll see, actually can be made to approved lists as well. So what I think we'd talked about doing, Barry, was just going through the document army by army and just talking about what the updates are, what the rationale behind it, perhaps a little bit of the discussion on the things that have passed. If that seemed like a good way of going through it.
Yeah. No, absolutely, absolutely.
Because the overall goal is to make the game better and to get rid of some of the things that people scratch their heads about.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go, it goes in alphabetical order. Yeah, and we've got about 5 pages just a roll through of changes. Shall I read out the first one?
Yep, go for it.
So, Beastman, correction to ambush rule. During the order movement, a sequence, the player nominates a point within dense terrain on any base edge other than the player's own table edge for every group of ambushing units he wants to deploy this turn. If the nominated point is in dense terrain, it must be chosen that every stand of every unit within the group must be at least partially within the terrain. So that is essentially a clarification to, it's in grammatical change there, isn't it, to make
It got rid of some of the more egregious abuses of terrain, which you could effectively deploy on a hill.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Which didn't make much sense.
So it refines that rule essentially.
Yeah, so make dense terrain the default, mm-hmm. or you can go the base edge or the table edge.
Which you could always do. There's always be a base edge.
These two came from your discussion mainly in the army list in the podcast episode you did recently, didn't?
Yeah,
didn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just the. As we play more games and we look at these things more subjectively, there are things that are like, hang on, that needs a bit more defining there, in terms of to make it totally clear. And we'll never stop doing this kind of stuff, to be honest. And that's what will make this. We're polishing, rounding off the corners, so to speak. There's a second one in Beastman for clarify Doomball special rules. Amend the Doomball special rules to read as the following: 7. Doomball, because that's the army list. Beast Herd, Herdkin, and Bestigors, joined by Doomball, will become subject to Bloodlust in the same way as Minotaurs.
Mm. Yeah. I am playing Beastman at the moment in an online league, and I find the Doomball like massively underwhelming because I don't understand why he doesn't cause terror. If he caused terror, I could see a use for him, but he's basically just, he just brings a negative. You don't want this Bloodlust generally. It's like turns them into frenzied warriors. And that makes them immune to terror maybe, but you've lost control over them and the character.
So, I mean, as I say, like it brings what you're saying, both a buff and a negative.
Well,
so
perhaps it's not enough of a buff to count.
This is where we go. This is your opinion. And so in the future, you might, you might suggest, for example, a Doomball needs to cause terror.
It's a strange idea, the whole thing of a Doomball. It's not like any other character in the game.
Because
it doesn't bring a lot. And with what it brings, it then brings a negatrate, which is a bit strange.
But okay, fair enough.
I think it's probably worth also saying, just to reiterate one of the comments you made in the podcast episode, this is about the fourth iteration of a Beastman list. And I think it's not as bad as some of the previous ones, but it's not ideal. It is one of the problems of trying to take basically a skirmishing ambush army and translate it into Warmaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Similar problems to what we have with Wood Elves. Which I think we'll just leave alone. But it might well be that there's Ian Standing has produced an experimental version of a Beastman list, which we'll. Various people, I think, are going to play test out over the year. With the Beastman list, I think it is likely to see some further alteration.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We're not talking about removing or adding units, as far as I'm aware. Changing what they do.
See, if we did that, there'd be dramatic changes, and we wouldn't do anything like that lightly.
I think part of the problem with this army in the future going forwards is going to be, what do we do with the Centaurs? Just because of the way they're based along the long edge, but they're cavalry models. And there's a balance to strike between, do we either force people to rebase models, invalidate certain units in their collection on the altar of making the whole army actually better? But then you bear in mind that the Centaurs are so useless, nobody takes them. And people may not even have the models for them.
Yeah.
So but it's,
but, They remind me, Centigals do remind me of pikemen, and it will take a long time to find a good solution, but we will find one, even for pikemen in the Dogs of War. Yeah. It may be that we allow, even though they're cavalry, they can support each other. I don't know. We'll find a solution eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. They're rubbish at the moment. Nobody would take them.
Well, you wouldn't, Barry.
I definitely wouldn't. No, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I wouldn't. I can't see a role for them either at all.
All right. Anyway. So moving on. Chris, I think if you speak about Cathay, because there's quite a lot rolled into that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the Cathay list, as you know, is one of the two new army lists that we introduced last year. The vast majority of the playtesting has been done by Jim, who's kind of been the champion of the list since its inception. And what we've got here really is just some tidying up based on playtesting. So the Ogres are now, I believe, called, well, the Bannermen, the Spearmen, we've renamed them Bannermen to fit in with the current fluff from the War Master Online games. Ogres have a slightly better profile. They're now basically the same as Iron Guts. So I think they're called Cathay Ogres in the list. Same profile, same points.
I think they're restricted to 1 per 1,000. I think they really are very tightly restricted.
Mm-hmm. Were they ever more than 1 per 1,000?
No, I don't know, but it's just because it was quite rare profile.
Yeah, it was contemplated, yes.
I think this is only the third army to have that profile, which is why they had them, but in very small numbers.
Yep, mm-hmm. just like everybody else, I guess. What else? Rocket launchers. Jim has playtested, and again, hat off to Jim, he's playtested every possible permutation of artillery for this army. What he reckons is best for the rocket launchers is very similar to the Chaos Dwarf one. It doesn't let you have an armor save, which again makes sense of exploding missiles landing in from the air. The Chaos Dwarf one, I don't believe, causes confusion on a 6. It's not a 4-5-6 confusion.
No, Chaos Dwarf is 4-5-6.
Four or six. Okay.
So they've got two artilleries that are overlapping. I always get them confused. One's cheap as chips, but it's like a lightning warp cannon almost. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a bit like a Skull Chucker from whoever them two kings. Mm-hmm. So I don't know which one the rocket launcher is. I think it's probably more like the rocket lighting cannon.
Yeah, it's a D6 attack thing. Yeah,
and it goes wrong on a wall and stuff.
Yeah, it's crewed by Chaos Dwarves. Yeah,
because I'm just looking in my army notes here. The Chaos Dwarf. Here we are.
But anyway, I'm sure it's costed them appropriately.
It'll be the same cost, absolutely.
And they've still got they can probably go wrong on a 1 because, you know, explosive weaponry, etc.
Tends to go wrong. Yeah, definitely. So, carry on, please, Chris.
Okay. Slight increase in the cavalry that you're allowed to take. 2 per 1,000 up from 1 per 1,000. And the Celestial Dragon, if you take it now, it's not a command. The Celestial Dragon was an upgrade for the Sorcerer. Interesting way that Jim's designed that, as we said when we did the Cathay episode, that the Dragon is an upgrade for the Sorcerer, and it has certain buffs on the Sorcerer, but there's some negatives as well. And whether you take the Dragon or not will largely determine the build of the army, because it has some positives and negatives. Mm-hmm. And then there was a correction on the spell list that one of the spells can be applied onto the chariots as well.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the problems was when he playtested it, the need to, or the possibility to have mixed brigades of cavalry and chariots didn't give enough flexibility because of the cavalry and chariots in this army are quite restricted anyway, just because that's how he wanted to design as a mainly infantry army. But there was a spell that you could cast. There was a typo that suggested you couldn't cast it on chariots, so that's just
clarifying that up. Yep. So moving on, Chaos. This is quite simple.
One thing to say is Cathay and Nippon are a little bit like we're talking about voting again in 2022 to make these permanent. They're probably on a 2-year cycle because changes are still going to be made.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't believe that a year is long enough for the lists. I think are pretty much there. But I don't think a year is going to be long enough, especially it's going to take us a while to get back to tournaments. And
yeah, exactly.
So But no hurry.
Yeah, no hurry. So, Chaos. I like this a lot. So, add chariot mounts for characters. Add the following to the character mount section of the Chaos list, a chariot, a mount, which is a plus one attack, obviously is keyword chariot, for 10 points. Minimum, maximum one. So, at the moment, the Chaos list has a dragon upgrade, you know, as in a character mount, but it has nothing else. And why can't Chaos ride characters riding chariots? So, there you go. Yeah. Nice and simple.
Absolutely. And the inevitable question, where do you get the chariots from? eBay in exchange for one. House of Chariot run by Mr. Pittman.
Yeah.
Where
slightly
else?
Different chariots, Dean. But chariots are hard to come by. A spare chariot. I mean, you've got to get a whole unit to get a chariot, haven't you?
So where do you get the cheap chariots from? Laren Miniatures do a very nice chariot model for, I think, 5 or 6 euros a unit. Yep. Trolls Under the Bridge in Czech Republic also do some very nice chaos chariot models that have come along in the last 12 months. But the other thing that you can do, it doesn't have to be a chariot.
No, it can be a
nice beastie. And it's you get the beastie has a bit more limited maneuverability, can't enter certain terrain, but gets plus one on the charge. So there's some nice modeling possibilities.
Like, think more like how in Ian Standing's YouTube set, you know, of army reviews, he always gives alternate, like, you could use these. And that's what you've got to think about. Yeah. So we've given Chaos a one attack upgrade character amount.
A sword, isn't it?
We say it's chariot, but it could be something else. Yeah.
A sword that can't go over linear obstacles.
Exactly, because it's so heavy. Yeah, like, right, okay. So, demons. Right, here we go. Instability table clarification. Amend the outcomes after rolling on the instability table as follows. 4 to 5, no effect, unless the unit is confused, in which case it ceases to be confused and is favored with the invigorating power of chaos. 6, the unit feels the power of the gods. As a result, it attacks the closest enemy within initiative range. If there is no enemy in initiative range, the unit ignores command penalties for the lost stand till this next turn. Additionally, if the unit is confused, it ceases to be confused, which needs to be said.
This is fixing typos.
Yeah, fixing
typos. Somewhere along the line, the outcome 4 and 5 had got the text had got mashed up, so we put it back to what it was supposed to. And outcome 6, if the unit is confused, it ceases to be confused. That's just a clarification, because it should be obvious that it should cease to be confused, but it didn't say it, so we had to say it.
And this is about us spelling out things, totally clear.
It's already been pointed out that the bit where it says, as a result, it attacks the closest enemy, should probably specify that it charges the closest enemy.
Because Sherwin pointed out, does that mean it does a shooting attack? And it's like, there is nothing in the demon list that has a shooting attack.
But demons are magic. They just magically attack.
Yeah, it's like, okay, fair one. All right. Okay,
to be fair, that error has been in that table since the dawn of time.
The dawn of time, exactly. All right,
it probably means that over the course of the next 12 months, that's going to move from attacks to charges, because what it does.
Because that's what it does, So we continue. Dogs of War, this is cool. Allow switching of handgunners for crossbows in the same way as Empire. Amend Dogs of War handgunner special to read as the following. You count enemy armor values as one worse when normal when shot by a handgun. One unit of crossbowmen per full 1,000 points can be replaced with handgunners, including the 10-point extra in price, while still counting the crossbowman min-max rule value. Note that this still counts for min-max value for handgunners. There you go. A great port from the Empire, which why not have it? Yeah.
Doesn't break the Empire list.
Doesn't break the Empire list. It just gives you more choice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you could push that. Well, anyway, I think that's a fine
change. Yeah, that's a fine change. Barry will have comments on the next one. So, dwarves, anvil points reduction, points cost reduced to 30. Take it away, Barry.
I've got anything to say. I'm still not sure it's worth 30. But.
Right. You put up a big thing justifying why it should be 30 points.
Not me.
No, you. It wasn't you.
No, it wasn't me.
It wasn't Barry.
No. Oh, it wasn't Barry. Whoops.
This has come from a few people. I had a long chat with Paul Godbold about this. Paul and Ian are of the same mind. At 50 points, the anvil was massively overpriced for what you got. Ian, I think, was the person who put up a lot of the justification on doing it. I have to say, I agree 100%, because if you look at what you get from the anvil, And compare it with other magic items, even at 30 points, it seems a bit expensive. But certainly at 50, nobody took it. We looked at tournament builds. I think the only time we've ever seen anybody say they would take it was your build in the podcast episode on Dwarves, Paul.
But that's Paul. So the big problem.
I'm not saying that critically because I know you like to try a little bit of everything, but you see what I mean. But,
yes, I know. Totally,
put it in the tabletop.
So the big problem is it gives you a minor buff to dispelling once per game, which is negligible. You could get that for 10 points, or you could just take a dispel scroll. But the bigger issue is it gave you a 4-up chance of ignoring terror till the end of your turn. Which is just, even if it was automatically ignored terror to the end of the turn, that even isn't that good. It needs to ignore terror in their turn when they're charging you in the flank.
It's more danger in their turn, but it's better. So, correct, and maybe that'll be a future thing.
It doesn't do anything unless you're fighting, and then it's a 4-up, and then it's only in your turn, and it's like I still can't even. Whatever.
Right. That's an interesting point because. Could that mean if you did say it was ignored terror till the end of the next enemy turn, then would that be an incentive to the dwarf?
I think it would be. Yeah,
come down from his castle and attack with his army. Rather
maybe. Well, certainly parts of his army. With the
non-troll slayer parts. Yeah.
With the runesmith, but the issue is then we're kind of going down the avenue of maybe it should have stayed at 50 points and had better rules. Because if you start giving it too big a buff, then it just becomes like an auto-include. It's like you wouldn't build a list without it, potentially.
You strike a balance, isn't it? You strike a balance.
So. Yeah, but it has to take an awful lot to get that stubborn dwarf general down off the hill. You know,
he's not coming down. He's not coming down. He's sending one of the runesmiths down. Go on.
Right, okay, this is good, this other change. Removal of brigading restrictions for troll slayers. Delete the sentence from the troll slayer special which says two or more troll slayer units cannot be given a brigade order. Only a single troll slayer unit can ever be included in a brigade. This will have the effect of allowing brigades of up to 4 units of troll slayers, i.e. they can brigade with other units as normal. Now, this is there because earlier days, there is a story to why there is this restriction was in there in the first place. And essentially, it's the right person moaning to the right person who listened.
But why can fanatics mob up?
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, why exactly? It's the inconsistent, but I'm saying to you about the root of the inconsistency.
Because even though they don't count towards victory points, which they don't, but that's a trivial thing, they do count towards break. Yeah, so if you throw 4 units of troll slayers away, that's still 4 units.
Yeah, it's 4 units. 4 units of dwarf warriors you don't have to kill. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so
if you kill that brigade of troll slayers and then take the artillery brigade, you've probably almost won.
You won the game. Exactly. So I'm totally happy. That's great. Great change for me.
I never understood that restriction because it meant. If you took troll slayers, you had to always have them at the front of a brigade of other stuff.
It was there for a really quite personal reason, essentially. And so we need to iron these things out. Cool.
But then the next question, Barry, I know you play dwarves. Would you take a brigade of 4 troll slayers?
I'm more likely to take the brigade now than I was.
I would.
There was no chance I was taking them before.
Well, yeah,
I was going to put them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's in 4 single units of troll slayers who can't go along with each other. So you needed like brigades for them to sit in. You just didn't have that many brigades.
And then they just get pulled off the front on their own.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, now they've got, you've got, basically in the dwarf build, which was forever set in stone in terms of like, this is how you build a dwarf build and this is how you play a dwarf build. You're now, so hang on, I've got a few more options now.
Because they were always the front of the brigade and they were always in line. Exactly. Now what I'll do is have a brigade of 4 in column and that'll be meaty. Yeah. Because they've got some, they put out some damage and they've got some resilience because they've got 12 wounds.
Or you could try it where you put 4 units in line, so the massive long brigade, which you can command because you're dwarves. They go forward. Let's see what they kill while you just gun up anything else that gets through. Right. Roadblock this.
So the idea really is it's kind of, I don't play dwarves at all. Yeah. But it's to try and make the army a little bit less monodimensional because it always seems to be Groundhog Day when you're playing dwarves.
It definitely does do that. Now, my answer has always been to that, where you play scenarios and that what makes it different. But exactly. You know, this is only for the better. These are only for the better.
You don't need to play scenario. We didn't play one yesterday. War Master is a little bit more forgiving with the scenario play than most games. that there is a scenario. It's you've got to get more break than them, or more victory points, or you'll lose anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So we can move on to goblins. Squig herd or goblin units interchangeability. The following to squig herd special rules: up to 2 units per full 1,000 points can be replaced by squig herd, and while still counting for the goblin's min max value. So this is taking the style of the same as now the Empire and now the Dogs of War, is in terms of increasing their choices of core troops, of what they have to have, which is cool.
Because I think it's quite a, you have to take, is it 4 units of goblins per 1,000?
Oh, yes, it will be. Yeah, I'm just going to.
So you could have 3 goblins and 1 squigs, two and two. And it just gives you a little bit more variation. Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, the same points, and it just, they have 3 attacks rather than the 2/1 goblins have.
So that's from like the list building perspective, no, the issue with the original list was you already had 8 units of rubbish.
Yeah.
You needed some good stuff. You didn't have any points to buy squig herds. So now you have 8 units of rubbish, but they're 2 different types of rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. You could have some of both. Yeah, exactly. Chris, if you speak about Nippon, because it's all you.
Right. So Nippon, I outsourced quite a lot of the playtesting. So thank you to Paul and to...
Jim
Puzzer, Paul Godbold, Jim Beach, and Matt as well. So the guys on the rules committee who've done quite a lot of work on this. So based on the feedback, we realized there was an exploit, a potential exploit on the Nippon list for the ninjas, because the ninjas are deployed, they're like gutter runners, they're off the table. And the Nippon, remember, it calculates break in a similar way to the Bretonian army. Initially, it was the samurai cavalry and the ninja units that counted towards break. Mm. But in an army where your break point is very reduced, you had the potential exploit of taking 4 units of ninjas and not deploying them. And then you
couldn't break.
It's an axe bit of your break point. The army couldn't get to. So this level of craftiness did not cross my mind at all when I wrote the list. So we thought about perhaps having them only count towards break when you deployed them, but we felt that was too complicated, so it was just easier to have them not count towards the break. We'll try that and see how it works. Yeah. Lots of discussion about the Ronin. The -1 command penalty was felt to be a bit too harsh. So what we decided to try and represent this idea that they are not an entirely trustworthy part of the army, we went for something similar to the Skaven under the lash rule, that they can only receive orders from a character within 20 centimeters. So you have to keep, if you've hired some Ronin for your army, you've got to keep somebody close to them to make sure they do what you want.
Yeah.
So it's an inconvenience rather than too much of a negatrait. And again, we'll see how that goes.
I mean, that is a big restriction. I mean, that's one of the hardest restrictions on leadership in the game, the 20 centimeter rule. Yeah. If you play Undead or Lizardman, you'll know all about it.
Absolutely. But, you know, would you rather have that or a -1 command?
That, please, because otherwise they're trolls. And we played with trolls yesterday.
It did not go well.
Didn't go well.
Without the free half-face move.
I tried.
He even sent the general to do it.
Yeah, the general was like, come on, boys, come on. No.
Like, did you have them in a wood?
No, but it's like, it didn't work.
The -1's too harsh.
Yeah.
even for trolls, we need to find something else. Because unless you're playing with a half-paced move, it makes them just a liability.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not talking about that.
Right, that's a different episode. Okay. Yeah. Right, what else? Points correction to Oni. Again, there's an error on my part in writing the list. I'd copied ogre stats, but actually the Oni do not have the ogre negatrate of the compulsory charge on humans. Yeah. So actually that means they're black orcs. Yeah, so they're now 110 points, not 105 points.
Fine.
Just correct.
Clever ogres they are. Clever. Yeah. Well-educated ogres.
Yep.
The shrine gets reduced to 30. The shrine is a direct copy of the Runesmith anvil, so for the same reasons it went that we talked about for dwarves.
Yep.
Probably the most significant change is to the Shugenja. The Shugenja is the kind of copy of the dwarf runesmith. And what we realized that is that the builds that we saw, for pretty much everybody, the Shugenja got taken and mounted on the Tatsu, which is the terror-causing mount, because the Shugenja was a copy of the runesmith. The runesmith has +1 attacks, but the dwarves don't actually have a terror-causing mount to stick him on. So what basically it meant was the heroes, the daimyo in the Nippon list, they became essentially redundant. Rather than nerfing the Shugenja, or Shugenja saying that Shugenja couldn't ride the Tatsu, we just said, okay, it's got no extra attack buff. If you want a fighty character, you're probably better off taking the hero. If you want to put the Shugenja on for whatever reason, then you can do that, but it's not going to be as good in combat.
Yep.
So did you reduce the points to 90, from 80 to 90 to 80 or whatever for this?
I don't believe there's a point change.
No,
I think he probably should have been 90 then originally, but it doesn't matter now.
You're saying that he can take a Dispel Scroll.
He's a runesmith. He's a runesmith. I think
is this right, Chris, that the Nippon list doesn't have a wizard?
Yes.
Yeah, so nobody could take a Dispel Scroll. But and how could you ever play an army, Barry, that didn't have a Dispel Scroll? I don't know.
Well, runesmiths can take a Dispel Scroll.
Yeah, as I'm saying, this is what the change is. Yeah, it's like, look.
So that's a clarification again. Error on my part that if you look at where it says in the rules that the runesmith can take a Dispel Scroll, it says it not in the runesmith special rules, but in the magic item rules, which I overlooked. So it's just clarifying that for the. But then the Shugenja's got a 4, 5, 6, dispel roll on every spell it's cast anyway. But if you wanted to have a Dispel Scroll in addition,
Barry would take it.
Of course, yeah. Why wouldn't he? It comes afterwards. You can make the roll and then.
Yeah, you get to do both.
Yeah.
Barry would take 2 Dispel Scrolls if he could.
Belt and braces.
He'd just have like a pack of them here, where we're just like, one for every situation. Right, sorry, carry on.
No, it's all right. I'll come back to have a question for Barry. We'll talk about it in a moment. Right,
yes, so the other thing. Yes, please.
The Shugenja has because the... A lot of the demons in the Nippon army have the instability problem, which... in the demon army is counterbalanced by the wizard being able to summon more demons sometimes. The Nippon army, not having a magic user, doesn't have that option. So to balance that up, they have a slightly modified version of a modification of the instability table, that if the Shugenja is within 20 centimeters of any units that are affected by instability, they get a +1 on the instability table. The logic there was that if the person who summoned the demons is close by, he can stop them disappearing into the void, which is basically the upshot of it.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we have to insert a clarification that it's only for Nippon units, so friendly units. So if your Nippon is fighting demons, the Shugenja is not going to make enemy demons
shit.
Or the Nippons.
Yeah, over Nippons. Yeah.
Well, no, but the demon wizard doesn't get that buff.
Yeah.
No, if you're fighting Nippon against Nippon.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's why it says friendly Nippon units. Friendly, doesn't matter what kind of demons they are.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, there's a game of Warmaster I've never played.
Nippon and Nippon.
Against the same army.
I mean, it was the Civil War in Japan was a thing, so it might happen.
Absolutely. Right, now, Barry, my question about Dispel Scrolls. If you cast your mind back to that tournament that Jim ran, the Triwiz a couple of years ago, where it was 2,000-point armies, how many Dispel Scrolls did you take? Because you were allowed to do one lot of magic items per army.
I probably took 2, but
He took three.
I also took an illegal combo. I broke the rules. And Jim
cheated
wouldn't allow
another
it.
Way.
But I'm not sure. I was using it, the supporting initiative charge.
Yeah.
With undead stuff.
Undead and ogres. Yeah, that didn't work out.
Didn't work.
If you don't push the rules, you got to push the rules.
Did you have two rings of magic as well?
Yeah.
No, because the ogres wouldn't bother with the ring of magic. And maybe for the Tomb King.
Because I had undead and vampire counts, I think. And I had 2 rings of magic. Didn't help.
Okay, so...
Anyway, moving on.
Thank you for that. Ogre Kingdoms. Nobblers can now provide support. Amend the Nobler special rule to read as following. Noblers are allowed to shoot as if they had bows, but its range reduced to 15. A Nobler stand cannot be supported by other kinds of infantry, only by other Nobler stands. However, that Noblers can support other kinds of infantry as normal. Noblers cannot be given magic items, and characters cannot join Nobler units.
So, I mean, that doesn't really highlight the change. The change is something that's left out.
It's that, you know,
they can now be brigaded.
You can be brigaded,
which is what they couldn't be.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Because you could always support stuff, because if you stand behind it, you're supporting it. But what you couldn't do is be ordered with it.
Ordered with it, So, and so exactly. So Barry points out it's the omission of what is not there.
So now they can be brigaded.
Yeah,
which is
that's a big, it's a necessary thing for the list.
Well, there's a risk reward. You don't say at the moment you've got goblins supporting trolls and ogres. And you've got, it's quite common to have chaff. You were playing it yesterday, weren't you? You had your Black Hawk supported by goblins or whatever. But for some reason, the ogres couldn't do it. Now, ogres still can't join units of Noblers. So if you push them back and there's nowhere to go, they're going to die.
Yeah.
And I said that Noblers can't be supported by ogres because that just doesn't feel right. So that's why would they? They don't care. Why would I bother supporting them?
Yeah. Exactly.
They're meant to die.
But I think, I think this is a necessary evil. To me, to be honest, this is a too easy a solution, but let's see where we go.
Too easy. I'm going to get a t-shirt with that on for Chris. That's too easy. We need something far more complicated.
Yeah.
This message is sponsored by the European Union.
Yeah. Something more challenging.
This is far too straightforward and commonsensical.
Too straightforward for us. So.
Okay, let me clarify what I mean by too easy. This makes the ogres too much like every other army, where you can support your good stuff with some chaff and you can get without any effort on your part.
Effort?
But let's go for it because, ogres are a difficult army to play competitively.
Exactly.
Well, they're not competitive.
Yeah, but... so Yetis...
Maybe they are now. Sorry, Paul.
We'll see. Our next thing is Yetis points change and can pursue all enemy. Points amended to 120 points per unit. What were they before, Barry? Yetis? Were they?
It was something crazy like 130 or 135.
And special tools, 25, I think.
Yeah, I never took them.
Yeah, add... Yetis can pursue any type of retreating enemy. There you go. Say again.
I think that's actually a very good change because the Yetis, they're very flavoursome for this army, and there are some lovely models out there.
But what's the issue they still have?
They still got the -1 command penalty. And they ignore distance modifiers, don't they?
Well, that's nice. That's nice, but we're not elves.
Okay.
So the -1 does hurt, and they still can't. They still have that crazy rule that if you put something supporting
if you put a character in, you
if a character
be
joins
by
Yetis,
Noblers.
They can't be brigaded by Noblers. Yeah.
No. But if you put Noblers with them, you lose the distance.
Yeah. Because you're going to have to order the Noblers. Yeah.
But you still keep the -1 to orders.
Exactly. It makes them really bad. So you're going to have units of Yetis on their own.
Yeah, units of Yetis on their own, or not at all.
Or not at all. Yeah.
Whatever. Okay.
So,
it's still an improvement. It's still an improvement.
Still an improvement. Tomb Kings, remove redundant text from the Leech Priests. Delete the special rule which says 7 Leech Priests. Leech Priests can cast spells like other wizard. This is unnecessary as the type entry wizard implies it already. Yeah, that's quite simple. It's just like, it doesn't need to be there. So that goes. Witch Hunters. Army rule update to hate more chaotic enemies. Change the army rule, widening the definition of hated armies to include Chaos Dwarves and Skaven. Amend the army special rule text to read Chaos means Chaos Army, Demon Armies, Beastman Army, Chaos Dwarf Army, and Skaven Army. Because they're all Chaos.
That's quite a big buff. That's now, 25% of armies?
There's definitely no way that a Witch Hunter would look at a Skaven and go, that's okay in my book. As in, I don't hate that. That is just a standing up rat man.
No, I know.
That I like.
But I mean, there's no downside, is there? It's just two more people they hate. So two more people are getting bonus against.
Yeah, exactly.
Just remind us, what's the effect on the army of the hatred?
I'll just have a quick look.
Because there's also talk about Norse being included, but I'm not sure how chaotic Norse really are they?
They just live there,
I think the answer to that question about how chaotic they are, it depends how you want to paint your models.
Yeah.
You can have, no, but you can have a Norse army that's very chaotic and it's basically a Chaos Marauder army, or you could have a, you know, the opposite of that kind of army. It depends on the models and how you want to do it.
Yeah, like a Viking army. Yeah. It can be whatever it wants to be.
Or you could have undead Vikings if you buy Property Forge models.
But the Norse list itself doesn't really have any chaos entries, does it? It's not got like dragon ogres or anything in it. It's all kind of Norse mythology based.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So what it, okay. So what it means, you asked the question, is that it means that like the Zealots rule, where they hate undead and chaos. And so that means that they will always use their initiative to charge these enemies. If victorious in combat of undead or chaos, like enemies will pursue in advance where possible. They get plus one attack.
Basically. All right, okay. Because that was all negative until the plus one attack.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, but downside, you know, when you get within range of the enemy, you have very little control over what the majority of this army does. So how you set it up.
And Zealots, you are three per minimum three. You're going to have six units of Zealots.
But have you ever seen this army on the table? I've only seen Janus use it. It is all Zealots. Yeah, and Janus fanatics. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So you have no control. It's just...
Darren Ware has this army as well. I played against him in one of Paul's tournaments last year, and it's just this wave after wave after wave of dross, which eventually wears you down.
But the dross gets a bit better if you're chaotic in
nature. Yeah, exactly, and it should do. So, Warhound's consolidation of special text rule. Addition of text from Empire Skirmishes rule to unit or special entries, previously cross-reference for simplicity, amend Warhound unit specials to read as following, essentially the same as the Skirmishers in the Empire. So, Warhound stands never fight as independent unit. Instead, you may add one stand of Warhounds to your units or Zealots, Handgunners, Pistoliers, or Flagellants. This brings the size to four stands. Warhounds always have Varma value zero. Warhounds can move up to 30 centimeters and fight because there's no way they could get 5+ armor from pistoliers. They fight as part of the unit and can be removed as a unit casualty player, which is Warhound casualties never count for casualties for purposes of issuing orders, which means there's no -1 penalty if there would normally be for a stand losing that stand. Warhound stands never count as part of the unit's formation when determining whether they move full or half pace, so no movement penalties incurred if they arrange the units out of the unit's regular formation, and that will really help with getting line of sight that you want. If they join cavalry unit, i.e. pistoliers, they are still considered as an infantry stand, but in this particular case, they can pursue enemy cavalry together with their main unit, because that would make them rubbish if they couldn't. Yeah.
So which way based are these fellas?
They've got to be based long ways.
They're long ways, long ways.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally a unique thing that only witch hunters have, where they have an attachment, an infantry attachment onto a unit of medium cavalry. But that's if you're going to do it, that's why you play witch hunters, isn't it?
I don't know. It was just a strange.
Strange. I mean, really, it's not really a massive problem because there's such a rare army to see.
Yeah.
And you can only have pistoliers. You can only have one unit, so you can only have two units of pistoliers, in the army. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can also attach warhounds to the zealots, the handgunners, or the flagellants.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not totally convinced of the benefit of adding them on to your pistoliers, unless, of course, it's to basically be a meat shield.
Yeah.
Because, like with the Empire skirmishers, you can choose whether any hits are taken by the skirmishers or by the main unit that it's attached to. So it's a way of preserving, I guess, pistoliers.
But the armor of skirmishers becomes the same as the unit.
And Warhounds, it doesn't.
Which doesn't make any sense. But anyway, I'm sure it'll get ironed out eventually. I think it would be easier just to not have them join part of the pistoliers. I don't really understand why they go with the pistoliers if they're infantry. I think it was just something that got in the original list and it hasn't been pulled out because they say, why do you have an infantry attachment that joins a cavalry unit?
But it's kind of like, it's an abstraction, actually. You're not having a pack of hounds running along beside the pistoliers. They're running in and out between the legs of the horses. It's like a pack of hunting dogs with your cavalry.
Yeah, which is thematic, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but then how in game terms do you have them having no armor and other stands within the unit having 5+ armor? Because you don't allocate against stands, you allocate against units. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, yeah. But so in this case, you if you have that corner case, because Zealots don't have armor, Handgunners don't have armor, Flagellants don't have armor, but Pistoliers do.
Have
5+ armor. You're going to have to direct, you're going to have to be a bit particular of, okay, these attacks.
But that's nowhere else in the game.
I know. Okay, so this, if this becomes a problem, this is something else we'll have to clarify, isn't it?
I just think it'd be cleaner. I know it's a bit too simple, Chris, but if you could drag it out,
Barry, you could say that Warhounds have three hits, don't they? So the first three hits the unit takes are on Warhounds, which have no save. They have to die first in pistolets.
But that's not how you roll hits. But okay, let's not worry too much about this for now. Yeah. It's better than it was.
I think there's a specification in the Empire list that says that the Empire player gets to choose whether hits are resolved against the skirmishers or against the.
They have the same armor, Chris. You just choose who to remove casualty. It doesn't matter where the hits go. You can take them off first or last, the skirmishers.
But is that not the same here?
No, they have more attacks, but these guys don't have the same armor, so it doesn't make any sense how you roll damage against them. Because how many do you allocate against the guys with no armor?
In the Empire list, it says they fight as part of their unit and can be removed as a unit casualty if the player wishes.
Yeah, but that's it. That's the only restriction. Yeah.
So it's in. It does invite another amendment, doesn't it? To just be particular about pistoliers having Warhound attachment, but this isn't a massive deal because you're never going to see that often. Yeah. You know, it is something to do, but it's like, it's not like, here's my witch hunter army of 20 units of pistoliers all with Warhounds.
Yeah, you've put in another change that Warhounds are suddenly infantry that can move 30, which again just feels like we're trying to. Anyway, that was always there.
They can't keep up with the pistoliers.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, what's that? It's like, so I've attached these dogs who are slower than
It would have made more sense if they were facing the other way around, and then they would have been cavalry that attached to infantry, and then they could have had no armor that way. But whatever. Yeah, it is what it is.
If anything, actually, the dogs will slow down to the rate of infantry when they're moving with infantry. Have you been out with your dog lately? Yeah. Your dog goes much faster than you do.
Yeah.
And most of the time, yeah.
Okay, so vampire counts.
Right.
Vampire Lord clarification. Amend the special rule for the Vampire Lord to read as follows. In order to clarify usage of magic items and command range. 4. Vampire Lord. These are powerful sorcerers as well as the vampire army's general. They can cast spells in the same way as a wizard and can be given a magic item restricted to either a general or a wizard. Note that the Vampire Lord is still a general and his command range extends over the whole battlefield as for other generals. They just need clarifying, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, but Barry, this is one that you'd put up, wasn't it?
No.
Okay, because I can. This feels like somebody's had a big argument about the exact wording in the rule book, and it needs to be spelled out.
It needs to be spelled out. Well, so we spelled it out.
Fair enough.
So that's all the army list changes. Then we go on to siege engines. So divine exact sizes for siege engines, battering ram, siege tower, and so. Is that how you say it? So.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about Paul, but this is like so fringe. Like I've never even seen a fucking siege engine.
No, neither have I. So we've made some amendments to siege engines.
Whatever. Nobody really argued about it because nobody had any.
Yeah, no one ever counter it. It's like,
if you think that's what it should be, let's put it like that.
Can I just ask you guys, between the two of you with your extensive play experience, how many siege games have you ever played?
Never. Not one.
None.
Okay. So then it has them if you're there, and then it has members of the Warmaster Rules Committee 2021, which is quite cool.
Right. Yeah.
Shows the breakdown of players. Yeah.
These are all the folks who I think we should. Shout out to all of them. Yep. Thank you guys for all the time and energy that you've put into all the discussions and the voting and things, because it's, you know, none of us are paid to do this, as Barry often points out when he's moaning. but it's a job that needs to be done.
And it's a nice breakdown of where people are all from as well. You know, it's cool. It's like,
The committee is full at the moment with 21, if people leave, then there's always potential for people to get involved. So,
yeah, exactly.
And people are only on a 1-year contract, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah,
they have to recommit each year.
Yeah, and I don't think with the groupings, there's nowhere that like tends to dominate everything. As in, all the the US guys all vote together, for example, because they're from East Coast to West Coast. The US is so spread out that it's like they don't know each other. You know, in a sense. Mm-hmm.
So I think the American guys, there's at least 3 distinctive groups of people. 3 player communities, let's call it that, which is pretty good. And, you know, I'd like to see more of the Australian guys getting involved, because they're equally spread out. You know, we tend to think of Australia as a small country. It's if you've ever been there, it definitely is not. So in all the different cities.
Size of America, Australia is easily.
Yeah. And the only way around is by air. So you've got lots of different little pockets of people. And again, that's why the playtesting process and the pathway towards approved cities, different communities, different groups of people put different takes and different slants on things. And that's why we need to playtest in the wider community.
So we've got about 10 minutes left. Thank you for everybody. As Chris said, it's been a challenging few months, to be honest, but
Done.
And now we get a bit of a relax. Toying with some of the rule book, maybe a little bit. So Paul, what feedback did you get? So let's get this done and then
On. Sorry. Give me, somebody tell a joke while I just put it up.
Chris had an idea, Chuck.
What have you been doing in your world, Barry?
What's my world? The kids are off school, so I'm daddy daycare at the moment.
Right.
So we're going to go to the beach. It'll no doubt be absolutely rammed. We've got a beach up there, so it'll be at least got somewhere to escape the throng.
Right, shut up, Barry. I've got it now.
End small talk.
I said that, does anybody have any questions?
We haven't heard these, so if I'm off the cuff, it's because it's off the cuff.
So first thing, would be interested to hear, so this is from Dan Grinsby, would be interested to hear the intention behind the changes and how you believe they will change lists. We just did that. Gabriel Nystor, I had a thought today about witch hunters in relation to the Nippon, who can bring demons, and the cafe, if they bring terracotta warriors, should their rules include them too?
Should they be hated, or should they hate those particular units? I think is what he's asking.
Yeah, right. Okay, so
do witch hunters differentiate between Nippon demons and regular demons?
I'd probably
say they probably would hate them.
They probably would. Yeah, I mean, had they ever seen them? Probably not. But
they're going to go. What are those demony looking things there? Let's give them a good thracking.
Probably. Yeah,
I mean, they're definitely more demonic than Norse.
I think when Nippon come into developmental stage, I guess. Well, no, they are. When we start seeing Nippon,
when they get approved and then they're a fixed target, then I'm pretty sure the witch hunters might have to look at
hating bits of them. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe.
Everything in the proposed changes makes sense. Taylor Kendall.
Well, that's good.
Didn't see anything out of sorts. Many were items you mentioned on your podcast. Ogre and dwarves changes I applauded. Now, if you could tweak the gobos so they don't need four bolt throwers to be competitive.
Goblin list.
You're asking a lot there.
He's asking, so he'd like a competitive goblin list.
Yeah.
It's not defensive. A non-defensive goblin list.
Yeah. I was like, and I answered that just simply, gobos competitive?
They are. Janice won with them. But the problem is...
That doesn't say anything.
They rely on trolls to do the thwacking and you can't order them. So you have to be defensive. You have to wait for them to come to you.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the best one.
Hey, Paul, I think the best answer for that to who did you say posted this question?
Taylor Kendall.
I think Taylor, if you're listening, the best answer to that and to anybody else who's got ideas, propose what you think a competitive goblin list would look like. Put it up on the experimental boards and we can thrash it out over there because you know we do welcome all that kind of input. Yeah. And I'll find it very interesting to see what on earth you do to a goblin list to make it competitive.
Get rid of the goblins.
choose something else.
Get rid of the goblins and put it in something decent. Anyway.
Okay, so John Davenport says, seems sensible and thanks for all the hard work. Has there been any consideration to including the skirmish rule from Warmaster Ancients in the same way as the light cavalry rule? I play Lizardmen and Skinks don't play right as chaff infantry like goblins instead of light and but mobile. This could also apply to Glade Guard and Gutter Runners and perhaps some others. Lizardmen feel the need for as though there is a skirmish unit in such a big part of the army. I would gladly pay more points or drop attacks for such a rule. I did answer this in my own opinion, but there we go.
I'm going to jump in before Barry has an embolism. I'm just trying to I can't mute him, but because I can imagine what he's about to say. The warband rule is...
So he's asking about the skirmish
rule.
Right, there are two... Did somebody else ask about warband?
No.
I replied back saying...
Okay. Sorry, Paul. What did you say?
So I said I play Ancients as well. John Danport, I play Ancients as well. Yes, your idea has been considered, but to implement it would be huge changes. Not saying no, but it never. But we would take a lot of playtesting. And I'm pro Ancients. And he also said. Then he replied back saying, "Thanks. I do see how it would require a lot of changes. Good to know it has at least been considered." And I said, "Oh yes, yeah, we consider all. For example, I would have Warband and Legion rules in the game."
But that's just make your own gay version of the game with Warband and Legion in there.
But, and Blackjack and Hookers. Yeah. Like
it's really, do you know, what it does, there's the argument that Ancients was Warmaster version 2. Yeah. However, the counter argument is that Ancients, you do not have terror causing monsters, flyers, wizards, and all the other kind of stuff. Exactly. Yeah. And the Warband rule, whites, it's very, very thematic. And the Skirmisher rule is very thematic for certain armies. Introducing it, you have to balance it up in some way, and it every time we have a conversation about it, the major surgery that you have to do to the entire game, you are writing a different game. So it basically would be Warmaster version 3,
effectively.
Which, you know, never say never, if it is put onto certain units, it'll be a unit by unit thing rather than an army thing, and it'll be very, very carefully tested.
I think it would be a different game, and you'd end up rewriting all the army list to rebalance, and it would just be a disaster. But that's my own personal point of view.
That's your personal opinion. Exactly.
I'm not a conservative. If I am, I've got a very little C conservative. But, at the end of the day, the holy text that is the Warmaster rulebook, we're trying to do as little as possible to come away from that. So there are some discussions around some what do we call them? What do you call it? Abstractions in the game. So, for example, if you charge something in the back and you lose, the person who's been charged in the back can't pursue because he can't see. Now, there are ways to mitigate that, and there are the ways why that isn't that important, and there are ways why, well, if you charge in the back, you don't lose very often. Mm. It's just a fact. But that's part of the game rules. And to change that, you have to change the line of sight rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And to change the line of sight rules affects like virtually every portion of the game.
Yeah.
Every portion of the game. Yeah. And some of the intricacies and the delicacies is like chess is very easy. If you just move a piece in chess, it's very easy. You don't think. But if you're trying to think 2 and 3 moves ahead and you're trying to think the outcomes of pursues and how you can maintain line of sight and stuff, that's where the complication in Warmaster is. And if you try and get rid of that, it's not the same game. You're just kind of dumbing the game down, in effect. Yeah.
If you want to hear the words from the Lord God himself, Rick Priestley, in Wargames Illustrated 400, which just the new latest issue, it's 400th issue. It's out now. Just gone out. It has an 8-page interview with Rick Priestley, where he lists his 10 best game systems like that he's designed. I think Warmaster is rated as number 5, and Warmaster has an excellent activation and command system that includes risk reward multiple activation options in its 10 mil gameplay.
The risk reward thing is the central tenet of the game, and that's where I fear we need to as painful it is when you have a turn and do literally nothing.
Watch for that report.
That is the game. Warmaster's not for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't enjoy the fact that you'll get to the end of a turn and want to throw your dice in the bin because you've done nothing, then
I didn't have a turn where I did absolutely nothing. I think I got one order off.
I had a Brigadier Cavalry that took 4 turns to do anything.
That was brilliant. It's like, oh, I don't have to worry about them, do I?
Anyway, that is the game.
So. That's the game system. I mean, like, as we say on the battle report yesterday, Warmaster is there's only 2 game systems I know where, you know, troops don't always automatically just do what you want them to do. And that is Warmaster and Epic Armageddon, because of its has an activation and blast markers. I really like that. You know, like, as in, if you tell somebody to do something, the first thing they're going to do is misinterpret it. You know, like, it'd be like, I'm Napoleon and there's Bethia, my chief of staff. And it's like, so I'm going to tell me these orders. Okay, I'm going to write them down for you. Oh, I miswrote that bit or misgot that town wrong.
Or someone rules lawyered what you wrote.
Like, or Romney rules lawyered me. And it goes to Colonel Pittman, you know, with the 112th Imperial Guard. And it's like, mon Dieu, which town does he mean? Left or right?
Oh, you said move forward. You didn't move forward directly towards him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
this way.
I just move forward that way. You're like, you know, I'm go this away. And you know, okay, you can also say it's like in Black Powder and stuff, but that basically takes War Master rules. You know, so it's, I really like that. And that is, to me, that is far more fun, far more, and far more true to real life. You know, that's just brilliant. It's just like, yes, it was painful playing Orcs and Goblins with no optional rule because I didn't go anywhere for a lot. And it's like, I tried to move the trolls. I tried. You know, like I made it as easy as it, like, just come here. But they would not do it, you know, and but they might have done. I did get two orders off on one thing at one point. I didn't make three orders, but I did get two.
But that's the game. That is the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And yeah. So you have to, when we're talking about changing army lists, you have to always might be mindful that that is the game. We can't change the army list based on an optional rule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. Cool. Right.
Right. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Committee.
Yep. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Barry Wright. Have a good day at the beach.
Yeah.
Paul, have a good day.
Thank you.
Do it well. Do it
well. Cheers, Chris. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye bye.
Would you like to know more?